Chapter 10. Monday. The Winco. The book from which the Winco hailed was a typical tale of wartime daring do. He and his crew hide themselves when England falls in 1942, and then, after a series of adventures, steal a bomber at Coventry and head toward London to attack the occupying forces' high command. But the book was abandoned as they start their first run from Putney Bridge, so they never got to find out if they were victorious or not. "It's frustrating," the Winco said when asked, "not to know whether one's purpose is fulfilled. You humans must get it all the time." Thursday next. Private Journals. "Can I ask a personal question?" Miles asked the wing commander, once we all had started on the trifle, which was excellent.
"Of course," said the Winco affably. "Ask away."
"Are you really fictional?" My career in the book world had not been common knowledge until the attempted assassination, and after that there didn't seem a lot of point in hiding it. I think most of the family knew anyway, Landon in particular, and while the book world was truly bizarre, as only fiction can be, the inclusion of evidence in the guise of the Wing Commander changed my experiences from being the product of an overactive imagination to something quite remarkable.
"Mind, body and socks," replied the Winco cheerfully. "And I don't mean that metaphorically, because I never disrobe in my book. My mind and body are truly at one with my socks. Look."
He pulled up his trouser leg to reveal 2 inches of grey RAF issue sock that merged seamlessly into his skin. The sock was actually part of him.
"That's kind of weird," said Miles. "It's a lot more convenient than dressing every morning. My clothes never need washing or pressing either. Permanent trouser creases for all eternity. Levi's would love to learn the secret of that."
"Do you have organs and stuff?" asked Tuesday, now that the Winco seemed to be in the answering vein. "I mean, are you actually alive?"
"I'm as real as my author made me, or the readers want me to be. I don't have blood or tissue or organs or anything, nor do I age or feel pain. I can't reproduce. Out here, I do have free will and a form of autonomy, so in that respect, I'm very much alive."
"Can you die?" asked Joffy.
"Erasure or deletion has always been a very real danger for a character, and even more so for me. I may look fairly robust to you, but I am on the book world's critically endangered list."
"How so?" asked Miles.
"Because I'm only in single-copy manuscript form. If the manuscript were to be destroyed by a house fire, mould or snails, myself and my flight crew, Septic, Jammy, Snuffy and all the others, would simply vanish."
"You must go somewhere," said Joffy thoughtfully.
"I'm not convinced the spirit can simply be extinguished."
"I agree.
And that's really what I'm here for," said the Winco, segueing seamlessly into his favourite subject, "to conduct research work into the existence of the dark reading matter."
"Dark what?" asked Miles.
"Since the observable book world makes up less than 20% of the theoretical quantity of reading matter," he explained, "the boffins back in the book world think there is an unknown region of story that we call dark reading matter. I'll go there when my book finally rots away to nothing. But what I'll find, no one knows. It's a one-way trip."
"We have a similar concept," remarked Joffy. "So where is your manuscript?" Miles asked the Winco.
"I wish we knew."
"It might be stuck in an attic somewhere," I added, since we'd looked for it on several occasions. "Or at the back of a desk drawer, fallen down behind a filing cabinet. Who knows? All we'd need is 10 minutes with a photocopier, and the Winco would merely be vulnerable. A limited print run of 10, and he'd be on Vanity Island, and at little risk of endangerment."
"What if you're landfill?" asked Tuesday. "Anaerobic digestion could take years."
"Would you make some coffee, please, Friday?" I said quickly, in order to change the subject. The Winco had thought of that too, and the landfill theory was good and bad news. Good, in that he could last for a century or more, with few ill effects and perfectly safe. But bad, in that the inevitable breakdown of the manuscript would be painfully protracted, as the story fell apart word for word. I'd seen it happen,
and it wasn't pretty.
Back in 1996, I headed up Juris Fiction's manuscript retrieval squad, I said. I spent almost a year doing little but tracking down critically endangered manuscripts. Did I tell you about how I found what came to be known as the Hemingway Hoard?
Many times, said Tuesday, getting up to help Friday with the things.
I thought I wouldn't bore anyone else, so we changed the subject to my mother and my Aunt Polly, who seemed to get even less and less dignified as they worked their way through their eighth decade together.
She doesn't listen to me at all, said Dad sullenly. You know those personal injury travelling booths where dumb people who feign accidents go to grub for cash?
Joffy said that he did.
They had one up at the Brunel Centre, a display with a table and some chairs. Your mother pretended to fall over it, then claimed she'd broken her hip and told them she wanted to make a claim. Against them.
How did it work out?
There were three other personal injury lawyers there, and they all started fighting to represent her. I had to call the police when it came to blows. During the melee, she crept away giggling and said that watching personal injury lawyers punching one another had an inexplicable joy to it.
At least it keeps her from playing dominoes at the day centre.
She's always been feisty, said Dad with a warm smile. Do you remember that trip we took to the Atlas Mountains when your mother tried to smuggle a live goat across the border wrapped up in a carpet?
No, I said.
Joffy?
No.
Damn, said my father. All those memories, and none of them shared.